So you know how I'm doing a Schitt's Creek rewatch,
but I didn't know that.
I am, and it's Mike's first time.
Oh my God.
As of right now, we're like 4 episodes away from A Little Bit of Alexis.
Oh my God.
He doesn't even know to look forward to it. It's the only thing like keeping me going.
Yeah.
It's the only thing where I'm like, I gotta like keep moving.
Yep.
Because Mike is gonna witness A Little Bit of Alexis for the very first time.
The only thing is it's not as long as you want it to be. Like you want it to be like 45 minutes in the episode.
But the scene is so perfect.
It is so perfect.
So that's sort of what I'm just like, just getting through the day so that we can experience A Little Bit of Alexis for the very first time.
She's perfect. Hi, Julie Bezzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
So, fam, we got a couple of things to tell you about. Number one, join our Patreon, but only if you want bonus episodes, only if you want ad-free episodes, and only if you're ready for the return of drag bingo.
Yeah, when is it March?
It's March 13th. It's a Friday night at 7 o'clock. If you're not on the Pates, you might consider joining to be with us for drag bingo. We've got the amazing Schwa. Playlist is on fire. Julian's queen of the chat.
Yeah, we love the chat. You also get prizes if you win that we, like, send you in the mail.
Steve has been building the prizes for, like, 2 weeks now.
It's amazing. It's so
always
much fun.
On a theme. The prizes are, they're not cheap, crappy drag bingo prizes.
They are not.
Always, like, prize packs that are, like, things you really want.
Yeah, and, like, they're on theme, whatever the theme is. It's all very fun. Vibes are spectacular.
And that's right at the $5 level, so don't forget about that. Also, watch us on YouTube. We've got 230,000 YouTube subscribers. It's insane.
Did I say that number again?
230,000 YouTube subscribers.
That's crazy.
It's insane. We're in a new fancy studio for now, and it's beautiful. We're having fun. We're
loving.
Really animated. We look good.
I hope so.
Yeah. Is that it?
I mean, we're just getting started, but
I know. All right, girl, what are we talking about today?
All right, so we're doing this thing where we're doing 2 episodes. We're doing The Cult Behind the Killer, Andrea Yates, all 3 episodes that are on HBO Max and Discovery, but we're doing it in 2 episodes.
Yeah, so the episode 1 is the episode you're listening to right now. Episode 2 is available right now at the $5 tier on Patreon. So if you got to hear how this thing winds up, you can go listen to it right now if you're on Patreon. If not, it will be our regular episode next week.
Yeah.
Andrea Yates.
Andrea Yates.
Andrea Yates confessing to police she drowned her children one by one in the bathtub.
I'd do anything to save my children, and there's nothing I can do. I was heartbroken.
Everyone was horrified. A mother killed her kids? How could she do this?
When I watch news coverage about Andrea Yates, it's like this woman is evil, she's insane. They are missing a huge part of the story. Michael Warnke. Michael Warnke was our spiritual teacher.
Andrea Yates' religious beliefs were not mainstream.
They called it a cult.
This is control. This is fear. This is a ticking time bomb.
Okay, so episode 1 is called Indoctrination, and we meet Rusty Yates, who's Andrea's husband. Just want to say at the top, I know this is a case that a lot of people know about, a lot of people are very obsessed with. I'm one of you.
Yeah.
We will get to, there's a lot that this documentary leaves out. You're going to be screaming at us as you're listening. I promise you, we will dive into all of it at the end.
Yeah, so that's going to come at the end of episode 2.
Of the end of episode 2. So we're going to say things, and Rusty Yates is going to say things that you're going to disagree with. We know the truth.
Yeah.
We will talk about it at the end, but we don't want to confuse everyone and like sprinkle it in and go back and forth.
Yeah, one other thing I want to say, this documentary does a really good job of not focusing on the murders of the children.
In like the gross way.
Like we talk about it throughout, obviously, but we don't go through what happened. We never have that moment. Thank God. I don't think I would have been able to sit through that. So just wanted to put that out there. We're not going to be talking about the murder itself in detail.
Yeah.
So we open with Rusty. He's watching videos of the kids. Like, it's just like, once again, please tell me there was a mental health professional on set to like, to deal with this, because
even if there was, he'd decline it.
Oh,
it feels like.
God. It's just so, let me know there was a mental health professional on set for the crew. You know what I mean? Like, knowing that these 5 kids were murdered is just so awful. They look so happy. We're looking at birthday cakes. We're watching them on bikes. It's like, it's just so tragic to watch.
Yeah. So we go back to 1989 in Houston, Texas, and Rusty tells us the first time he saw his wife, Andrea, she was by the pool. He says she was looking like a goddess.
Yeah, we learn about her a bit here. She was a nurse at the time. She was doing really well. He says she was really smart, and I admired that.
After we got married, we discussed children and said we considered each one a blessing and we'd have however many came along. That was our plan. We didn't know they'd come along so fast.
And we didn't know they'd come along so fast, LOL. First of all, that's not a plan. That actually sounds super hard on the woman. We'll just, like, have as many kids as comes up.
Yeah.
And also, please don't play dumb about where babies come from.
Uh-huh.
You know, Russ. Don't be like, I don't know what happened. Especially, I looked at her.
Like, there's so many people who actually do struggle. But, you know what I mean?
Right. So, like, that's number one where it's like, oh.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yes. So the kids are Noah. He was born in February 94. John was born in December 95. Paul, 97. Luke, 99. And Mary will join us a little bit down the road.
And this is where Rusty says that he, quote, jokingly called Andrea Yates Fertile Myrtle because every time she could get pregnant, she did. And I'm like, okay, so these are people who are not using any kind of contraception at all. And are still now, like, refusing to acknowledge its existence.
Yes.
Like, just like, I don't know what happened. She's pregnant. And I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, but the religious cult is not far behind.
No, I also did love this little town because every time she was pregnant, they'd, like, put a sign in the town square.
Congratulations. We'll, like, talk about that, but, like, she was known and very well-liked in the community.
Yes.
People were very supportive of Andrea.
And it's interesting that we really don't get a lot about her as a person in this documentary.
We don't, but it's all out there for you, and we will tell you about it.
Yeah.
So Luke was born in 1999, and a few months later, as Rusty tells it, Andrea starts to withdraw. She's staring blankly. She's not speaking. In other words, it's postpartum depression, but no one is saying that.
No one's saying that. Luke is the fourth baby in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she spent 4 years pregnant.
And then the next year, Mary is born in November of 2000. So they have 5 children. And it seems like Andrea was constantly either pregnant, just gave birth, or breastfeeding, or homeschooling. This was her entire life.
You know, it's funny. Even, like, being a parent, I hadn't even considered all of the, like, being pregnant, having just given birth while still managing all the other kids.
Yeah.
Like, that home must have been absolute chaos.
Absolute chaos.
And Rusty will say as much eventually. Like, it was a dad that, like, got up and went to work. The kids were her job. Girl, Rocket Money is a sponsor this week.
Yeah, we love Rocket Money.
I love Rocket Money. I was thinking about it last night when I went to bed because it's a finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions. And I was like, I need to, like, I have it on one credit card and I need to put it on others because I'm like, I'm paying too much, girl.
Yeah, because Rocket Money can track the subscriptions.
Yes.
So you can see it all on the dashboard, which I love. Everything's in one place. So you can see, am I using that? Is that one worth it? Like, see what you're using, the frequency, how much everything costs.
Well, and also the app consolidates checking, savings, loans, investments into one single dashboard to give users a clear view of their financial picture. And so, like, for me, I need everything in one place so I can see everything all at once, or else I will only look at one thing and then turn it off.
Yeah. So you can set, like, budgets and goals. You can get, like, personal insights, regular reports on what you're spending.
They also do automated savings so you can help. Like, if you need that extra push to, like, build that savings account, that automated savings feature really is kind of incredible.
Yeah, it's one of those set it and forget it things.
Exactly. So, fam, like we said, Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings.
Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
That's rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
rocketmoney.com/obsessed. Just to, like, recap, Luke was born in 1999, and then a few months later, as Rusty tells it, Andrea starts to withdraw. Then Mary is born in the year 2000. They now have 5 kids.
Andrea seemed fine there for a couple months, but then Andrea very quickly declined. She was just a completely different person. She was nearly catatonic.
And this is the first time of, like, a million times he uses the word catatonic to describe his wife.
And, like, when we get there, we are going to learn that she had extreme postpartum. This woman was really, really suffering.
For years.
So, June 20th, 2001, Rusty says it was a normal morning.
With his catatonic wife.
Who's eating cereal out of the box. Like, it's just a very sad scene.
Yeah, for him, like, oh, she's doing things that are out of character for her. And I'm like, you just described her as catatonic, so yeah.
Right.
Then he says, well, I've never seen my wife like this before, but I hug the kids and then leaves 5 children under 7 with a woman who's a shell of herself, and out the door Rusty goes.
Which is, like, even if you're not going to give a fuck about your wife, Rusty, which obviously is very garbagey, like, those kids are not safe.
Right, just not dealing with it, just like, well, this will teach her how to be a mother, and this, like, how do how do you say in the same breath she was catatonic, she's acting totally out of character, and then you leave everybody to go to work?
I also want to say, too, that Rusty is not like a sheltered guy. Like, he works for NASA. He's a man who's out in the world. It's not like he is the pastor of the local church and is living in, you know what I mean? Like, he's a man of the world who should have some understanding of what's going on with his wife.
Yeah, I was going to, like, save that for, but yeah, he's an engineer at NASA in Houston, as in, like, Houston, we have a problem. Like, yeah, we fucking do, number like, one.
Literally, but, like, Houston, like, literally we have a
like,
problem.
But, like, in Houston, he's an engineer for NASA, so for him to like, fall for all of this and lean into it when he's an engineer for NASA is pretty telling to me about, like, what his motivations for following this, like, really culty, garbagey guy.
Yeah, so we hear the 911 call, and, like, this is one of the very few times in the documentary we hear Andrea Yates' voice.
Because she called.
I need a police officer. What's the problem? Hello? I just need a police officer. Are you there alone? No, my kids are here.
The dispatcher is trying to get more out of her, but she has nothing to say.
It's incredibly eerie and chilling because she goes silent after she says this. And the dispatcher is trying to get information, but we just hear, like, the static and ambient noise on the other end of the phone.
And you start to get the sense that the dispatcher is wondering if, like, the killer is in the house. Like, is she being held against her will? Because she's saying, like, is anybody else there with you? And she says, my kids are here.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. So then Andrea calls Rusty, and it's the same kind of call, just sort of robotic, repeating, you need to come home, not saying anything else, not really answering questions. And you really get the sense of, like, oh, she was not okay when Rusty walked out the door.
Well, and because he even says, oh my God, what has she done?
Rusty, fuck off.
But also, I think her doing something extreme like this has not been far from his mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No matter how much he wants to pretend like he didn't know what was going on, the fact that he's jumping to, oh my God, what has she done? Like, if Steve called me and was like, you need to come home, Steve having killed Daisy would be nowhere in my mind. So obviously the cops come, they see what Andrea has done, and Andrea is arrested.
Right. So this is like the very intro of the first episode. And if you don't know this case at all, like, everything is sort of about to get turned upside down for you, because I'm sure you might be thinking, how could this horrible woman do this to her five innocent children? And then we meet Moses Storm.
Yeah, and I just want to, just to say, just to, like, expand on what you're saying, like, the only thing I knew about this case when we started was that she was the horrible woman who killed her kids.
Right. A lot of people did.
That's all anybody knew about this case.
Yeah. And yeah, and it's one of those cases where it's like, you take two, I mean, that's what the press was saying, and then you hear, like, oh my God, I can't look into this. This is too morbid. Oh my God, this is so awful.
Yes.
But Moses is here to say,
I don't know how to square this feeling of knowing that I understand 100% why Andrea did it. And I hate that I understand.
I was in the same cult, and he's going to explain to us, not only is he working through a survivor's guilt, but more importantly, he totally understands how Andrea could have gotten to this point.
Yes.
And her to do this act and think that what she was doing was a good thing.
Yes.
Wrong, but the right thing at the same time.
Moses is saying, like, he's watching the news coverage of this event, and he's saying, like, they're missing a major part of this. We all are. Like, the world was missing a major part of the story. And that major part of the story is a man named Michael Warnicki.
Yeah, so this is, he calls himself a spiritual leader. He's a cult leader.
Yes.
He was all about, like, the impending doom of Judgment Day. He was a miserable person. From the very beginning, he was, like, loudly and violently screaming at everyone to be miserable, too.
Yeah.
Misery, eternal damnation, hell, Satan, the whole, it's exhausting.
Once again, what is the appeal of that?
Like, can everyone lighten up? What kind of life is this?
Like, I was going to say this later, but we're going to see this guy street preaching at some point. He's screaming at people. I'm like, does that ever work to attract, like, more members of your cult?
And they'd, like, panic during thunderstorms and start, like, begging God to save them. What kind of life is this?
I know.
And it's child abuse.
And Moses is, like, he's watching videos of the Yates family, and he's talking about how alike his family was to that family.
Right.
Like, everything about it is the same. And just one other thing to say about this Michael Warnicki guy, it doesn't seem like he was that concerned with having a huge following. You know what I mean?
No, we've seen this before where it's like, as long as you're super, super, super loyal, you could have 4 followers or 400 or 4 million. It doesn't matter. Yeah. As long as you're like ride or die, literally for him, he doesn't give a shit.
And Moses will tell us more about this later. Like, this was very much not about like a family vibe. You know, this was very much about like this man just like exerting control.
He'd say things like,
God was going to end the world in a matter of 46 minutes from right now. He was that intense, was that present.
This is a matter of you being forever in hell, in eternal damnation.
God is ending the world in 46 minutes from now. And I'm like, right, but what's the plan when that doesn't happen, you dick?
Right.
Then he'd like manipulate it into some lesson about, you know, like he was tricking you, or he would just, you know, it's all about control, keeping you on your toes in the worst way, destabilizing you, the fear of God, literally. But it's like, that's not real.
And my question about these kinds of cult leaders is always like, do you think he believes it, or do you think he just wants to control people?
In this case, it is so clear to me that he hates women and it's all about controlling women.
Yeah.
It's all about control.
Scratched the surface of that yet.
Yeah. I mean, because Rusty is here to say again that he and Andrea had, quote, traditional values. And I'm like, that's a dog whistle.
Yes.
Well, I know what that means. That's
right.
A dog whistle.
And he says, like, we read the Bible as a family. Because what Rusty's going to do throughout this entire documentary is distance himself from Warnacki. Mm-hmm. Rusty needs to not be culpable in any way for this. It needs to be the thing that happened that totally shocked him.
Right. Which is weird. Because it doesn't work.
No, and like the introduction to Warnacki was his doing.
Right, Rusty met the cult leader back in college, and then this cult leader was sending him tapes through the mail. I also want to say, and I will drop this in multiple times just so you can realize it, that they were not on a commune.
No.
Everyone was in different states.
Yes.
All of this cult leader bullshit was happening through the mail.
Yeah, like we're going to meet other people later that were his followers for 10 years who met him in person one time.
Like 7 years into it.
Yeah.
So this is not on a con, they're not face-to-face. Just imagine the damage you could have done if they were all face-to-face or like what these people really could have done.
Totally.
Not to say that there wasn't damage caused, but like this was all happening through the mail.
Which is so crazy.
In the 80s.
This is the kind of guy, he's like so nuts. He's like going into his room and recording tapes with his, like his worldview and sending it to people. And like, and we'll talk more about this later, which I know is the favorite thing that we say on this podcast. We'll get there when we get there. But like, these people who join these cults, I'm so sad for them, because what is missing from your life that this is the answer to the void that you've been living with?
You know what I want to say about this in particular? I know people like to throw around no one joins a cult, but this Michael guy is starting off loud and aggressive. This is not, we see him with the huge like Westboro Baptist Church signs, like massive signs pointing and screaming at people. He was fanatical from the start. This isn't a lovey self-help group where you're like trading scarves like fucking Nexium or whatever. This guy was exactly who he is from the beginning. So Rusty, when you say that you admired this guy, you joined his cult.
You did. And the other thing that I wanted to say too, because I remember going through this when I went to college.
I'd met him back when I was still in college.
Jesus Christ, Lord of lords and King of kings, I shall set fire to this earth.
I'd never seen that kind of message where you don't have to belong to a church, you don't have to belong to an organization to find God. I admired that.
This guy is mostly finding people on college campuses.
How is he allowed on campus?
That's a great question. I mean, if it's a state school, maybe it's like public property or whatever. Because every school we hear about is a state school. But also, when I was in college, we had a week of orientation. I went to Emerson College in Boston. And like the number one thing they drilled into us was don't join a cult, especially this week.
Is that right?
Don't join a cult. Don't join a cult. People at that stage, they're experiencing like being on their own for the first time. They're experiencing being able to make their own choices for the first time.
They're also like 18 years old.
18 years old. So like there's something so specific about him going to college campuses to find his victims, I'm going to call them.
And the thing is, he wasn't finding them like, you know, playing an acoustic guitar, sitting in a circle talking about love and shit. He was screaming about hate and hell and Satan and the end of the world from the beginning.
Yes.
So what is so admirable, Rusty?
And what is so interesting? Like, what is, we're going to meet a guy named David in a little while who was like taken by this guy from the second he saw him.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm very, very glad that I don't have the void in my life that would be filled by something like this.
That's so angry from the beginning.
Because there is a cult for me. We've talked about this.
Right.
You know, like, I could very easily wake up one day and be like, I've been in this cult for 10 years. How did this happen?
And that's why I wanted to make the point, like, that's not the same as the whole, like, no one joins a cult thing doesn't really, I believe, in my opinion, apply in this situation because he was screaming at you.
And, like, you're literally writing to him asking for the literature and the tapes, you know? Like, you are joining this cult.
There was no substance. It wasn't like you were dropping acid and he was dropping it a little bit less than everyone else. Like, it wasn't like that.
Yes.
You kind of had to, like, seek this guy out.
Girl, Rocket Money is a sponsor this week.
Yeah, we love Rocket Money.
I love Rocket Money. I was thinking about it last night when I went to bed because it's a finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions. And I was like, I need to, like, I have it on one credit card and I need to put it on others because I'm like, I'm paying too much, girl.
Yeah, because Rocket Money can track the subscriptions.
Yes.
So you can see it all on the dashboard, which I love. Everything's in one place. So you can see, am I using that? Is that one worth it? Like, see what you're using, the frequency, how much everything costs.
Well, and also the app consolidates checking, savings, loans, investments into one single dashboard to give users a clear view of their financial picture. And so, like, for me, I need everything in one place so I can see everything all at once, or else I will only look at one thing and then turn it off.
Yeah. So you can set, like, budgets and goals. You can get, like, personal insights, regular reports on what you're spending.
They also do automated savings so you can help. Like, if you need that extra push to, like, build that savings account, that automated savings feature really is kind of incredible.
Yeah, it's one of those set it and forget it things.
Exactly. So, fam, like we said, Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings.
Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
That's rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
Can I tell them the thing about Moses now? Because I kind of want to.
Sure.
So we're going to learn at the very end. I have it in bright pink letters because I took a screenshot and sent it to you. I'm like, I did not see this coming. Moses is a very successful stand-up comedian in LA.
He's working through that shit. I love it.
And I was on his Instagram. He's got like over 100,000 followers. He draws like really big crowds. But a lot of his routine is talking about his childhood. But like, he doesn't give the context of the cult in the acts that I've seen. He just talks about his mom and his family and how weird they were. So like, hearing it here in the documentary where it's like really sad and dark and scary, it's like a whole different way of presenting this information.
It's cool that he was able to talk about it in this very real, raw, emotional way here with us while he also gets to work it out. And
in comedy, because like we both know comedians, like Moses in this documentary is not giving comedy vibes at all. It's not like he's here yucking it up, trying to like get the crew laughing. Like this guy is crying. He's going through it.
Yeah.
He's remorseful. He feels he's got survivor's guilt. Like if you had been like, what do you think Moses does for a living? I would be like, I bet that he owns a hardware store. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I love this for him.
I love this for him, too. So he tells us he's born the fourth to fifth kids. His mom is Kathy. Now, importantly, Michael, the head bad guy here, the head of the cult, Michael is his mother's uncle.
Yeah.
So he was born into the family of the guy whose cult this is.
Right.
My mom met my dad and then immediately got pregnant. And this is really where she got attached to Michael. If you go from being the popular girl in high school to then you're pregnant, out of wedlock, for her at that moment, this high school identity disappeared.
And she married Moses's dad right away and then turned to religion to save herself because, as everyone told her, she was a dirty, shameful, useless whore.
Yes, exactly.
Their words.
Hey, who's the comedian here? You're like, Moses.
Moses.
I know.
But, like, that's basic. I mean, we've seen this a million times.
Yes.
So she had to, like, go to religion because she's, like, worthless and she's a whore and she's, like, she has nothing. But at the same time, she goes to a religion where it's like, well, all you do is have babies.
Well, I was going to say, she completely loses herself in this religion.
Right.
And Moses says, like, she, like, completely reinvented herself as a member of this cult.
And we hear him, like, screaming on this audio, this cult leader, like, there is no Jesus Christ. There is no salvation. So what is there then?
Right.
Fear, manipulation, a shitty, miserable life, a murder eventually, like,
yeah.
What is there then?
Right, because like just like to put the fine point on it, it is this man's teaching that drives Andrea to do what she did.
Yes.
And this is the big reveal of this documentary. This is literally learning about this man and his teachings and what he made her believe about herself and her kids is the big reveal. It's the thing that the world didn't know about her when she was on the cover of People magazine for being the world's biggest monster.
Right. So let's talk about David. David, Michael was his, quote, spiritual father. He describes his family as, quote, very traditional Hispanic family. He had three sisters. So when he went to college, he was like the first person in his family to graduate college. But he joined a frat.
Yeah.
And he came from a family of sisters. And now he has 100 brothers. And he loved it. And this is when yuppies became a thing. And David was like, oh, I want that. I want that to be my life.
And you know what? Like, he set out to do it. And he fucking did it.
Yeah.
He wanted to make money. He wanted to, like, get the good job, have the nice car. David totally does this.
While the guy, this cult leader, is on his campus screaming at him, and David is sort of like torn between being a yuppie and how, like, the guilt over being a successful person who made money and has a job and a life.
Yeah, so much to say about all of this. Number one, like, when David describes Michael Warnacki at his college, he's like,
I thought, wow, this is the first time a man of God is calling out other so-called Christian people. That was powerful to me. It was bold. This guy had balls with his camel print khakis, huh?
You know, the guy's kind of muscly and he's loud. He's wearing camo pants. Like, all of this really impresses David. The guy Warnacki is, like, taking down the traditional understanding of Christianity. Like, that also really speaks to David.
And I'm like, right, but this isn't a hot take. Like, oh, the guys who run the mega churches know nothing of humility. Cool.
Right.
I know.
I'm also just like, I wonder if David was brought up in Christianity. Like, we don't really get much of his, like, spiritual upbringing, because in order to be so drawn in by this guy Warnacki, you have to already have an inclination to care about religion, to understand enough of what this guy is denouncing,
right,
to care about what he's saying.
Like, or you agree, like, yeah, I'm with you, televangelists, you know, like, the mega churches suck. So
yeah.
If David's like, oh, I recognize that, like, we agree, and then sort of as an 18-year-old kid on campus, and he's much older, David's like, the guy had balls with his camo print khakis, and kind of chuckles, like, it's
yeah.
kind of a ridiculous scene, because he's like, you know, spewing this violent rhetoric and everything is a battle and a war is coming and, like, stories about beating people to a pulp. And I'm like, David.
And I think, too, that, like, some college kids just want to be a part of something.
I guess. But what really struck me in this moment in particular is, like, David and Rusty will be like, it was edgy. It was
yes.
ballsy. And I'm like, we don't speak to a single woman in this documentary about, like, I would have loved to have talked to a woman about her perspective of, like, why she would have been drawn to him. Did the man introduce her?
I was going to say, I think that is the case, A, because he didn't have a lot of followers, and B, because in every instance that we see, the woman is brought in because the husband is already there.
It's just interesting. Like,
yeah.
I think most women would walk by this guy and be like, shut up, you fucking blowhard. Like,
exactly.
Why are you even allowed here? And then some of the guys are like, ooh, he's edgy in a way that, like, ooh, I get to talk about violence.
But, like, we see it now. Like, this is why people join the Proud Boys. You know what I mean? Like, this is why people are drawn into that kind of world. Because
here's
the
question. Have you punched a Nazi today?
Not yet.
You should.
Luckily, I don't know any. But none of
that doesn't really matter anymore so much.
I truly.
They can just, like, pop up where you least expect them.
Nazis in disguise.
Fuck that. Punch a Nazi.
So now we see the pamphlets this guy is sending out.
What?
And, like, the first one we learn about is called How to Win the Crazy War. Now, and in learning about the crazy war, whatever the hell that is, we get a little bit of this Warnacki's backstory.
Snooze.
Well, he went to Central Michigan University. He played football, and he was really good at it.
All of a sudden, I got hurt during a spring football game.
I lost reputation, image, the guys, the scene. I had nothing and nobody.
He claims to have encountered the resurrected Jesus.
And because he was injured, he didn't get to go to the NFL, says David. I was like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, like, who told you this? The cult leader?
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Was it in one of his pamphlets or tapes or whatever?
That is when he's saying everything is, quote, satanically infested. And I'm like, can someone please have a metal band be named Satanically Infested?
That's
a great
or just
band
a
name.
T-shirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Satanically Infested.
I love that. And once again, like, another pamphlet is, like, asking the followers, like, what are you living for? What, like, asking all the big questions. And so This guy, David, is so drawn in by this guy, Warnacki. I guess he saw him speaking on the campus, but didn't, like, join the cult right away. But after thinking about it for a while, he, like, looked at one of the pamphlets. This guy, Warnacki's got his, like, home address on it. And David writes away and is like, hello, daddy. Like, how can I be your follower?
And it's so interesting because David's, like, a smart guy.
Yes.
And he has goals for himself and he wants to be a yuppie and he wants to be successful. I'm not saying that as a joke. Like, in my notes, he becomes David the yuppie because he wanted, like, a high-paying job and successful. And it's like, this guy hates schools and hospitals and anything based in reality.
Yes.
How did you get here, David?
And that becomes the crux of David's issue, is that it's like the 80s and like he sees like, you know.
Greed is good.
Greed is good. He wants to work for the Fortune 500 company. He wants to have the money. He's nailing it. But at the same time, joining this group where the leader is saying.
He says that every institution, colleges, hospitals, they're all satanic distractions. So you do everything except seek the real God.
The demons are being unloosed. You are headed for hell. This whole world is headed for hell.
I thought the whole world was controlled by the devil.
All companies are of the devil. All hospitals are of the devil. Like, everything that you're doing that isn't about me is of the devil. And so, like, David is sort of, like, in the closet about having this, like, great fancy job.
Yeah.
And like, going back and forth, feeling like he's got to eventually choose between the two.
Religious
like,
trauma is a hell of a drug, man.
And it happens real fast in this religion.
I mean, so let's talk about, we're back with Moses. He has a lot of these home videos. And he explains that he lived in a rented one-bedroom house, seven people, five kids, just like the Yates family, two parents, seven people in a one-bedroom house.
That is just so crazy.
Right. And of course, everyone's homeschooled because
yes.
being in a school is demonic and satanic and satanically infested or whatever. And everyone grows up, like, that just means that everyone in this instance, in this cult, everyone grows up in this, like, echo chamber of insanity without having a say in it.
Right.
The and kids without, don't get to decide.
And without any outside influence to look at and be like, that looks happier.
Right.
That looks like something that's better than my home life.
And Rusty chimes in to claim that Andrea was the one who really, really pushed for homeschooling because she was afraid of what he calls the negative influence of the other kids on their kids, and she didn't want them exposed to it. And so Andrea, according to Rusty, was like, heave-ho, we are absolutely homeschooling. She was like the driving force, he says.
Yeah, and this is where also we start to see all of these other home videos. Like, we saw a bunch of Moses. They're all chanting for Jesus and like...
We are watching a home video right now with all my siblings. And these were tapes that were meant to go to Michael to show how blessed us kids were and how much we praise Jesus.
They don't even know what they're saying.
They don't know what they're saying, but the point is for his mother to send these videos to Michael to show them what a great job they're doing raising the kids. Because one of the things we're going to learn down the road, and this obviously takes us where we're going, is that if these parents can't, like, break these kids, if these parents can't get these kids to be saved by a certain age, then everyone's going to hell.
Right. And everything about this is child abuse. And so, like, Michael and his dumb wife, Rachel, and their eight kids bought a bus, and they drive around screaming at people. And so Moses' mom buys a bus, because if the cult leader does it, you have to do it.
Because, well, also, the cult leader bought a new bus, so now he's selling his old bus. And so, like, so Rusty and Andrea buy the old bus.
But I'm like, okay, so if you don't do the thing that he does, then you're disobeying him, and I guess you'll die a fiery death in 45 minutes from now?
Exactly, right. But that's the other thing, too. It's like, it's not supposed to make sense. Because it's like, if right. you don't get it, well, that's the point. It's because you haven't been divinely inspired yet the way I have.
Satanically infested.
You're satanically infested.
Happily.
That's going on the calendar for 2026.
Like, it's gotta be.
It's gotta. Girl, Rocket Money is a sponsor this week.
Yeah, we love Rocket Money.
I love Rocket Money. I was thinking about it last night when I went to bed because it's a finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions. And I was like, I need to, like, I have it on one credit card and I need to put it on others because I'm like, I'm paying too much, girl.
Yeah, because Rocket Money can track the subscriptions.
Yes.
So you can see it all on the dashboard, which I love. Everything's in one place. So you can see, am I using that? Is that one worth it? Like, see yep. what you're using, the frequency, how much everything costs.
Well, and also the app consolidates checking, savings, loans, investments into one single dashboard to give users a clear view of their financial picture. And so, like, for me, I need everything in one place so I can see everything all at once, or else I will only look at one thing and then turn it off.
Yeah. So you can set, like, budgets and goals. You can get, like, personal insights, regular reports on what you're spending.
They also do automated savings, so you can help. Like, if you need that extra push to, like, build that savings account, that automated savings feature really is kind of incredible.
Yeah, it's one of those set it and forget it things.
Exactly. So, fam, like we said, Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings.
Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
That's rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
So Rusty claims he's not into buying the bus. Andrea is very into buying the bus. The kids are into it. So Rusty, the like patriarchal world, like is overruled by his wife and kids and like is forced to buy the bus.
And once again, this guy works for NASA. What are you doing living on a traveling bus, girl?
And I got to tell you, it's not like, oh, HR for NASA. He's an engineer for NASA. He is surrounded by science and math and reality and logic.
Right. And it's like, this was not like work from home Wednesdays. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, how are you living on a traveling bus street preaching with your crazy guru and being an engineer for NASA? We got to get people to the moon, girl.
I got to tell you, we already went.
At this point, like 20 years ago.
That's
you know,
true.
We got to make sure the space station is taken care of.
I think
we got to be monitoring that planet you want to live on.
I know. We got a lot of work to do the planet.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, this guy's an engineer for NASA. Focus, Rusty.
Well, guess who's not invited? Rusty.
Yeah.
But, I think the thing is, for Rusty, this is kind of perfect because his wife can write the letters and be in the cult and he can still use the patriarchy to his advantage. And then he can go off and, like, go to work and leave her with the five kids. And, like, it kind of works out pretty great for Rusty because I think based on what we're learning here, it's like, this is a great way to control the woman in my life.
But, and also, if anything goes wrong, he can blame it on the cult guy.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So Moses says,
street preaching and the bus entirely consumed my childhood. As early as 3 years old, I was out on the street yelling at people saying, you're headed for hell. Even though I had no idea what I was saying at three.
Street preaching at 3 years old. This is child abuse.
This is the craziest thing I've ever seen. Like, I don't understand how this doesn't feel like child. I guess we can say that at this point, the mother, Moses's mother, has been indoctrinated and she's been groomed. All of them have been. But, like, screaming on the street. And Moses was saying, like, he was doing it proudly at 3 years old. I don't know if you all remember what three-year-olds are like, but, like, they're barely verbal.
Like, he goes, I was yelling at people, telling them they're going to hell, and I had no idea what I was saying.
If I were a person on the street who saw a three-year-old screaming that at me, like, I would be calling the police on that family.
Right.
It's
truly insane.
As small and insular as this cult was, they were pretty public. And I just want to know, like, where were the people who saw this happening? Where were the cops that saw this happening?
They were like, come on, honey, grabbing their three-year-old. Let's go across the street away from the crazy people.
You know, and in fairness, I would probably do the same.
Because they were public, but there were three of them on a street corner.
But I do think if I saw a three-year-old kid being dragged around, holding up a sign saying you're all going to hell, I would hope that somebody would call. I'm a foster parent, so I'm a little bit dialed into this world. I know that, like, social workers get calls for this kind of thing. You call them, you know? Like, that kid is not safe.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
Here's the deal, though, everybody.
That's also, like, the least horrible thing that happens to a kid in this.
Oh, my God, no. Here's the deal, everyone. The end of the world is coming.
One of Michael's core teachings was about the end of the world. Only few will be saved, like in the days of Noah. That means 8 people. That's how many people were saved on Noah's Ark. So I was counting Michael's family, and I'm like, well, that's already 8 people. How is there room for us?
And only 8 people are going to be saved. And now Moses hears this as a kid, and he's like, oh, my God, Michael, the cult leader, his family's 8 people. How is there room for everyone else? Why is Michael screaming at me that the end of the world is coming and basically I'm dead? Like, what do I do?
And the thing is, everybody, including the other adults, are all doing the math. But they're all thinking that they're going to be, like, the exception to the rule.
Well, this is perfect, though, because what the cult leader is doing is pitting the families against each other.
Yeah.
Because Moses explains, well, now the Yates family is a threat because they also have a bus.
Yes.
There's 7 of them, 7 of Moses and his family, and 8 of the cult leader's family. Like, there's not enough room for everyone to be saved. And this is when Moses says, when the stakes are so high and everything is super violent and super scary, he says,
in that scarcity mindset, you would be surprised what actions people will take to spare themselves and their family from this tragic end.
You'd be surprised what actions people will take to spare themselves and their family from the tragic end that the cult leader is screaming at you about.
Yeah.
And he says it perfectly. And that should, if you're new to the story, kind of wake you up and go, oh.
Yes. Yes. Oh. And that's why Moses, like, funny as he is, like, every day wakes up with some kind of survivor guilt.
100%.
You know?
And, like, what he just said is one of the many reasons we're here.
Yes. Right.
Talking
that's
about
exactly
this.
Right. That's exactly right.
So David the yuppie frat guy is spending hours studying Michael's teachings, he says.
Can like you hours. Think of anything more boring?
No. And not just boring, like, stop fucking yelling at me, man.
I know,
like,
I know.
Lighten up. I'm going to live my life. I'm a witch. And you don't want anything to do with me.
No.
And you're not going to flip me.
You're deviated.
Satanically infested.
That's what it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, deviated septum is what I have fixed.
Oh, right, right.
Now I can breathe and I haven't had a sinus infection in 2 years.
That is true.
Isn't that amazing?
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. When he said to me, and he was like, I can't wait for you to have the surgery because it was so bad.
Yeah.
He was like, your septum is like too deviated, satanically infested.
Yeah.
And he said, he was like, I cannot wait for you to walk into my office for like your third checkup and be like, doc, I can't believe it. This is how the other half lives.
Yeah.
And that's what I was like, I could have cried.
I remember at the time being a little bit worried that you were being sold a surgery you didn't need.
No.
Oh,
it changed my life. I'm in my DMs about it. People ask me about it. I give them advice about it. Like my personal experience, of course, it's not universal, but.
Reunite the septum, everybody. Get that septum reunited. We do not want it deviated.
But David explains like kind of what you were saying. He calls it spiritual schizophrenia. His words don't come for me.
Yeah.
But because he was like,
on one hand, I'm happy. I've accomplished this achievement. I was the first person in my family to go to college and graduate from college. But on the other side, I'm feeling guilty. I knew Mike would be disappointed. And I was fearful because I knew that he would think, see, I was right. Look at you. Called you out as a phony. And you are. And you know it.
He feels super guilty because this goes against Michael's teachings. And I'm like, well, stop mailing away for the tapes. I'm sorry. I know. I don't mean to say it.
I couldn't agree more. And like David with the good job who feels so guilty because corporations are evil is going to be Michael's first fucking phone call when he wants to take his family to Europe and he needs money.
And I don't mean to. I just think this is such a, like, you should be scared by this, that
yes.
This can happen so far away. It doesn't happen on a commune. It's not like the self-help group where everyone's living together, that David can be in a place where he says there were two Davids.
Yes.
You know, that should scare you and sort
yes.
of go like, oh, and especially now with the internet.
And it just made me wonder, are there some people who just don't feel like they deserve to be happy? And I don't want to put that on David. Like, he's here. He's taking accountability. He's
yeah.
saying all the right things.
I don't mean to talk shit about David.
No,
I'm
no,
not
no.
saying
I'm,
that. I'm not.
I'm with you too. But whenever we cover a cult documentary, I'm always wondering, what is the thing that, like, David was missing that this was filling?
Right.
You know?
Right.
It makes me sad for him.
Yeah, and I just sort of wish that we, I guess, heard that.
Yes.
From David. It seems like, and these people have given us a lot, and David's been really honest, but I guess that's the one thing that I felt we didn't hear clearly.
I do wonder if it was said but not used, because the David timeline jumps.
It does.
It'd be like,
fair enough.
Like, we get to the end of David's story in the cult, but we never hear the story of him leaving. All of a sudden, he's a crusader against the cult.
And David does great work. Like,
he
I'm
does
not,
great work.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, the Yates family, right? They have 5 kids. Life is busy, mostly for Andrea.
Yes.
Now, Rusty claims,
after Luke was born, life was, you know, taking care of the kids. And so, I'd lost touch with the Warneckis. But I didn't discourage Andrea from writing if she wanted to write. I'm like, you know, whatever, that's her business, you know, her choice.
That's her business, that's her choice. And I'm like, that is so interesting, Rusty. Here's a question. Does that apply to, like, her body or just writing the letters to the cult?
Right.
It's just, like,
yes.
interesting. It hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, it's really funny that we're talking about Andrea's choices right now.
Well,
Rusty.
And listen, fam, like, not to be too, like, evasive about it, but this is some of the stuff we're going to talk about at the end of episode 2, because there's a lot more to know about Rusty and their marriage.
And just to hear, like, wow, these 5 kids, like, wow, like, Andrea's doing a lot of the heavy lifting, and
I can't imagine it. I like
all the heavy lifting, really.
Steve goes away for a weekend for work or whatever, and I'm alone with Daisy, and, like, we're
And she's 12.
And she's 12, and she's one person.
Five kids. kids under seven.
I truly, alone, truly cannot. And suffering.
And suffering and scared and not, it's crazy. It makes me fucking furious.
Yeah.
So Luke is baby number four out of five. And remember, this is when Rusty says, this is just now when Andrea starts to not be like herself.
Yes.
And he says, I don't see it as any kind of illness. I just see it as like, oh, maybe it's too much. What's too much, Rusty? Use your words. What are you saying?
Yeah.
Say it then. If you're going to sit down for the doc, then say what you think is too much for her, Rusty.
And I want to reiterate that, like, I understand, at least in my understanding, these were the early days of, like, the real conversations happening around postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And I would give Rusty more room to, like, not necessarily know. I think that there are men who don't know about that stuff, you know?
Sure.
But what I was going to say was, Rusty is a NASA engineer.
Yeah.
This is a man who knows things.
And also, you know? Like, you should care if your person is even a little bit different.
Yes.
Are you okay? Yeah. What's wrong? You feel like the vibe's off.
Yes.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
That could have helped at all. And even if you, like, you have to listen. You can't just ask the question. You have to listen and hear your person when they're suffering.
Yeah.
It feels like she's giving out pretty clear signs.
Well, and she's not even doing it on purpose. Like, she just can't function.
Right.
Like, she literally is staring at walls. And it's like, you know, if that were Steve, I'd be like, babe, I love you. We got to get this figured out because I can't leave you home alone with the baby if you can't take care of her.
Right.
You know? Girl, Rocket Money is a sponsor this week.
Yeah, we love Rocket Money.
I love Rocket Money. I was thinking about it last night when I went to bed because it's a finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions. And I was like, I need to, like, I have it on one credit card and I need to put it on others because I'm like, I'm paying too much, girl.
Yeah, because Rocket Money can track the subscriptions.
Yes.
So you can see it all on the dashboard, which I love. Everything's in one place. So you can see, am I using that? Is that one worth it? Like, see what you're using, the frequency, how much everything costs.
Well, and also the app consolidates checking, savings, loans, investments into one single dashboard to give users a clear view of their financial picture. And so, like, for me, I need everything in one place so I can see everything all at once, or else I will only look at one thing and then turn it off.
Yeah. So you can set, like, budgets and goals. You can get, like, personal insights, regular reports on what you're spending.
They also do automated savings so you can help. Like, if you need that extra push to, like, build that savings account, that automated savings feature really is kind of incredible.
Yeah, it's one of those set it and forget it things.
Exactly. So, fam, like we said, Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps you find and cancel unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings.
Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
That's rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
So by 1999, Andrea is in the throes of a mental health crisis.
Yes.
Right? But, like, we know that because we're smart and we're watching this, but it's not being said just
yet. He calls it a nervous breakdown.
Like, we haven't heard the word doctor yet. Or a therapist yet.
Yes.
And so Andrea, this is, like, the fourth time he says catatonic.
Yes.
And so then this is, like, we drop this in, and then they do this a lot where we kind of get, like, a little bit of Andrea, a little bit of Moses, a little bit of David, a little bit of David, a little bit of Andrea. Like, we're back and forth. So now this is where we get, like, as the first episode ends, Moses is telling us about the absolute extreme violence that the parents were inflicting on their children and also allowing the cult leader to beat their children, to which I say, fuck all of you.
Yeah.
You're a monster if you let this happen. This is, there's no excuse for this.
There's no excuse for it. And how it's being explained is that Michael, who I think is just a masochist.
The cult leader.
Yeah, likes to beat children. The explanation, and this is the whole premise of the documentary.
Michael is it. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, and only the rod of reproof will move it far, far away.
They love it. They want it because they know they don't want to go to hell.
But if you can't get them in line by the age of 12, they are all going to burn in hell for eternity. So they are literally beating their children into submission. Oftentimes, the kids have done nothing wrong.
Right.
They're just beating them because Michael is telling them that they have to. And I understand that these parents have been indoctrinated. These parents have been groomed. I get it. But they are beating their kids within inches of their lives.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree the tiniest bit, because the grooming thing for me, I struggle with, because he was always exactly who he was. So that's the only point where I'm kind of like, I would love to see, in a weird fucked up way, I'd love to see the grooming, because that would help me sit with this a little more.
I understand that. I hear what you're saying. And it could just be that I can't sleep at night if I think that these parents just like decided to listen to this guy and just beat the living shit out of their kids.
Or like consider it an honor and a privilege when he would take a piece of plywood to their child and then force the child to write Bible verses on the pieces of wood that they'd be beaten with.
But I think the evidence of the grooming has to come from the fact that like these parents weren't like that before they met him. Or like these parents weren't like that before they were members of his church. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they weren't beating their kids until they were convinced that if they didn't do that, their kids were going to burn in hell. I mean, ultimately, that's why Andrea Yates kills her children.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I guess grooming might not be
the right word. It's just that I think maybe it's more like when you accept a belief, like maybe it becomes that catch 22 where you've accepted this belief system. And so now, like, because you've accepted it and done all these horrible things, you can't go back on it. You know, like you're in too deep to get yourself out of it. Like we never learn if Moses' family is like still in this cult. We never meet anybody else in his family. We only meet him. He's here to be very honest. He'll tell us later he was in until he was 16.
Yeah.
What was that escape journey like? But it's just like the stuff about the beating was so incredibly hard to watch.
Yeah. It's awful.
Yeah.
So that's how the first episode ends, basically. So the second episode is called The Horror Within. And Moses says something super interesting here. He goes,
when I watch cult documentaries, I get jealous of their episode 2. They show people, we were all coming together. We're all in this commune and we're doing yoga together. We never had that. We never had the episode 2. It's not like the Children of God cult. This is not Wild Wild Country.
This wasn't Wild Wild Country. And I'm like, oh, fuck, Sheila mentioned? Oh, my God.
I know,
he was like,
I know.
He's like, this isn't that. Like, we didn't have that. We were already isolated, which, again, is, like, such a crazy thing to think about, that this was all through the mail.
Yeah. Once again, we only meet the Yates family. We meet David. We meet a handful of other people who got out early. But, like, it feels like this was a very small following.
And Moses says, like, they'd go down to Florida to see this cult leader guy, like, once a year.
Yes.
And it was, like, torture for him and his sister. But like, just to hit that home, it's like you'd get like a newsletter or an audio cassette tape and he'd be like screaming and eventually he'll graduate to video. We'll get there. And like, it's just really crazy. It's scary
to me. I agree. And Moses is saying that like, Moses grew up knowing you cannot get out. You will never be out. This is your life forever.
Right. And the end of your life is death and doom and destruction and hell and Satan. You know, like there's no good anywhere.
Even if you do the best you can, only 8 people are going to heaven. And that's the entire member count of Michael's family.
In 45 minutes.
So it's also just like, why are you all doing this?
I don't know. Lighten up. This is no way to live.
But can I tell you that that is like, that is the thesis of our episode of these episodes. Like, lighten up.
Even if you believe that we don't, that we have more than one life on this plane.
Yeah.
The one you're here for now. You lighten up and just be nice?
Moses, we're not talking to you. Like, you were born into this.
Yeah,
like,
no
choice. The kids
you're the
have...
Leah Remini of the scenario.
Exactly. Like, anybody born into this is like, you obviously you have no choice. But like the
cult leaders of the world, saying. Like,
yeah. Oh, I know. How much fun is it to run around the world screaming at people looking like an insane person?
It's actually super fun because all the women fall in line. That for him, it's fun.
Oh, my God.
So Rusty today is like, you know, after he's used the word catatonic 15 times.
I honestly don't know what precipitated Andrew's breakdown. But of course, having kids is stressful. Living in a small space can be extra stress.
But I never really realized
that coupled with her exposure to the Warneckis could be troubling.
I can't tell you what precipitated Andrea's
breakdown.
I
have no idea. I do know that it came right after the 4th pregnancy and then again after the 5th, but I could not tell you why.
I'm like, and he just keeps saying like, I don't know, man, I guess 5 kids in a small space is a little bit stressful. And I'm like, oh my God. God.
I know. And this is the first time that he really distances himself from the idea that the Warnacki cult has really much to do with this at all. And that's when it hit me that, like, because he introduced the family to the cult and didn't, like, force them to get out of it, he really has to distance himself from culpability here.
Yeah.
And I know, look, I just want to say this. I know that we're going to learn at the end of episode 2, like, of our episode 2, a lot of, like, really shitty things and ways in which this man was a really bad guy. But at the same time, like, his five kids were murdered, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's got to live with that every single day. Mm-hmm. And so I can't feel no empathy for this man.
Okay.
You know?
I hear that.
I'm trying to look you in the eye as I say it.
I hear that. So, you know, it's 1999, and this is a few months after Luke was born, their fourth child. So remember, this is, according to Rusty, the first time Andrea starts, quote, disconnecting.
I open the bathroom door. And there she is standing, looking at herself in the mirror with the knife up to her neck. She just stood there, catatonic.
And he walks into the bathroom and he sees Andrea staring at herself in the mirror with a knife to her neck.
Now, this is an absolute moment of crisis. Mm-hmm. That is not treated as such.
No. But he actually takes her to a doctor finally. Yes. After using the word catatonic 20 times.
Yeah, she's hospitalized and the doctors tell them that she has postpartum depression. And according to Rusty, the doctors explain the seriousness of the illness and it completely falls on dead ears.
Well, I just he goes, I don't know what that looked like or what it meant. I'm like, hey, NASA engineer, ask a fucking question. And also take your wife seriously. Take this woman seriously. Stop saying she's stressed or emotional or must be a whole lot of work having that litter full of kids that you did to her.
Yeah.
The way he's like, I don't know, man. I didn't know anything about it. And there was literally no way for me to find out more information. Rusty.
And the thing is, the one thing the doctor tells them not to do is have more kids. And they just from Rusty's telling, they decide together, according to the documentary, that they are going to not listen to that. Because what happens is they medicate Andrea and she starts to get better. And so Rusty is saying,
she did get sick again. She could try to harm herself again. But I didn't even think that at the time. I just thought, okay, she'll get sick. Worst case, it'll be like a flu. She'll get treated with the same medicines that worked for her before. And we'll be done. That's simple enough, right?
There is an excellent chance that not only will this happen again, it's going to be worse.
Yes.
And it's going to be harder for her to come back from. They tell us that here.
Yes.
And Rusty decides to call it the fucking flu. And he says, well, okay, so we'll have another kid. She'll be hospitalized again. Take medicine and we'll be done. That's simple enough, right? Rusty, what about Andrea and her choices?
I know. And when does it end? You know what I mean? At what point? Because the thing is, in a true partnership, even if Andrea wanted more kids, of which there's really no evidence that she did, once again, according to what we're told in the documentary, they just agreed that they would have as many kids as God gave them. It is incumbent on the partner to say to the one that wants and bears the children, honey, I love you.
I love you too much to see you go through this again.
I can't.
It's
can
not
adopt.
Worth it
if
to
we
me.
We want more kids, we'll adopt them.
We have four children. And that's what pisses me. He's talking about this like it's an inevitability.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Right.
Just listen to her. Don't minimize it. Don't call it something else. Don't call it the fucking flu. Listen to her and the doctors.
We're also, you mentioned this at the top of the episode, we're not told their, religious take on contraception. You know what I mean?
It just doesn't exist in their world.
Yes.
And, and he keeps using the word we. I'm like, who's we?
Yeah.
There is no we right now, Rusty.
And she's not obviously here to speak for herself.
Right. So now we jump back with Moses and we get this other violent story that we will go through quickly because there's too much trauma to get through in this goddamn thing.
Well, it starts with him talking about how they're living on that bus. His whole family, his parents are barely making ends meet with their $40 a week rent at the campground. I grew up poor, 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 poor. Even we had more money than that, you know?
Right.
And it's growing up poor is hard. Anyway, growing up like this, it feels impossible.
Because they weren't allowed to work.
Right.
It was all satanic.
Right.
That's the
Which
thing.
Why,
it's
David is doing it on the sly. He's got the company car and the credit card doing it on the sly.
He's not sneakily telling... watching Wall Street.
Exactly.
And so Moses' sister meets a new friend who's not part of the cult. And this new friend is also a girl. So Moses' sister makes the mistake of saying, because she's a kid.
Yeah.
Makes the mistake of saying that she really likes this new friend and she really had fun with her friend.
I just want to slow down on that for one second because it feels like this little girl is experiencing fun for the first time in her life.
Right.
It's the first time she gets to go play with a friend. By the way, parents, you put your kids at a campground full of families and kids and then lose your shit when your kids make a friend.
What did she do? Play tag for 20 minutes?
Right, exactly.
What did she do?
Right.
And because of this,
she was in probably the most amount of trouble I've ever seen. And the word trouble is tame. She was
beaten for an entire day.
His sister was beaten for an entire day. And I also think that part of it is like, you liked a girl, you said? She was a girl? Like, the homophobia can't be ignored here.
No, and Moses sort of lets us linger on that thought too, I think.
A little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter. It could have been any... The point is, anything and anyone outside the cult resulted in a beating for the children. And the mother was... It was an honor and a privilege for this fucking man to beat her kids.
For an entire day.
Yeah.
For an entire day.
Well, that'll teach her. That's what they're thinking.
I can't think too much about what that means. You know what I mean? I can't think too much about what it means. Yeah.
But the point is, everyone's isolated. You can only be in the cult. You can only talk to people in the cult. You have to believe everything he says. The kids are being beaten. Everyone's living in fear. And the parents are monsters.
Can I just say, too, that Michael is telling the parents that they need to beat their kids as hard as they can. He cites a Bible verse that says, bruise and scar away evil. Now, I looked this up today. According to
what's the real interpretation?
Well, according to my best friend, ChatGPT.
Oh, no! You did not!
I Gemini'd. I did not ChatGPT. Do you hate the AI?
I fucking hate it.
Why?
It's destroying the planet. It's bullshit. Oh my God, I hate it so much.
It's here, it's queer, it's going nowhere.
I hate it.
Okay,
I'm reading a Read Books Punch Nazi shirt. I'm not into the AI.
The Daily today did a whole thing about like AI coming into communities and like the response to all of it. I'm not here to defend AI, but I am here to say what I learned, which is that the translations of the Bible do have like versions like, it doesn't say directly that anywhere, but there are translations that like that are similar to that, but absolutely nobody believes that it literally means to beat and bruise and scar your
fucking
kids.
So it's not even a direct quote?
Not anywhere near a direct quote.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Typical. So David, the frat bro and the yuppie.
When I graduated college, I was offered a job at General Mills. And I was excited, you know, because General Mills is a Fortune 500 company. On one hand, I had a company car and a salary and a bonus. But on the other side, I'm feeling guilty, you know, because I've absorbed enough of Michael's teachings that I know a job is wrong. I know a job is cooperating with Satan.
And like the more successful he got, the more he hated himself.
A job is, quote, cooperating with Satan.
Like, what?
Why? What are you saying?
Look, I'm going to say it again because I don't want to skip it when we get there. But like when Michael wants to take his entire family to Europe, his entire 9-person family to Europe, David is the first person he calls for money. David's going to tell us he gave this guy 20 grand over the course of 10 years.
And for the next 2 years, David leans into the cult even more to, quote, understand the path he needs to go down. Excuse me, as Fiona Apple so wisely said at the 1997 MTV Video Music Awards, go with yourself.
Yes.
Also, this world is bullshit.
This world is bullshit.
But go with yourself, David.
Yes. I mean, I've said it too many times to say it again. I don't understand the disconnect. I don't understand why you can't just like have gone to college, been the first in your family to graduate, be thrilled to have this great job that was hard to fucking get and just go live your fucking life. I don't understand. And I'm not like, I'm not out of David. I'm not at the dirt. You know what I mean?
I know. Let's talk about The Witch and the Wimp.
Oh my God. That could be the name of this podcast.
100%. A wimp with an H.
I know.
I'm like, why do these people insist on these weird arbitrary spellings?
Wait, how do you spell it? Is it W-I-M-P?
Yeah.
Oh, I would have always spelled it with an H.
It's W-A and this, but like, why? What's with the arbitrary misspelling? Zodiac did it. It's so annoying.
I know.
Anyway, it's some pamphlet from Michael that says all women are witches on some level. And I'm like, this is when I'm like, oh, are they insult? That's not an insult.
Thank you. I
love it. It's always like some badass compliment. But all jokes aside, he hates women. So he's teaching the cult.
In The Witch and the Wimp, Michael says that all women, as a result of Eve's disobedience to God, inherit a witchcraft nature. This witchcraft nature seeks to control and dominate men. And if you are going to be a real man of God, you're not going to tolerate being ruled by a contentious woman, a witch.
Women are trying to dominate men like that. And then
whether we know it or not.
Right. So David, of course. So David reads the pamphlet, decides this is the word of God.
Right.
He starts seeing dominating women who need to be controlled everywhere he looks. Peg Bundy, Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
He would have hated Modern Family.
Hated. And like, what's interesting is that like, Rusty doesn't mention this. They have, because we get, like, this is a clever editing moment because we get David saying, like, he's falling for this and now seeing the world through this insane lens. And then it's Rusty being like, yeah, there I am, an engineer at NASA.
Yeah.
My wife's catatonic for the fourth year in a row. And there was nothing I could do about it. No. And I'm like, Rusty.
I know. And the other thing that made me so insane here is we see a video of Michael and Rachel and their kids, and all she wants to do is tell the camera how wicked she is, mm-hmm. how awful she is, that her husband has to remind her.
We don't claim her.
Like, Michael is talking over her as she's trying to explain how awful she is and how grateful she is to be dominated by her husband.
She's still an idiot. She's still a dumb woman.
I could not believe what I was watching.
Oh yeah.
Like he wouldn't even let her explain how awful she was for just having been born a woman.
Because she's less than,
yes.
So he'll do it better.
He had to mansplain how awful, like, the whole thing was mind-boggling.
I'm out of nowhere, you know, you can't be there and have that.
And you know, it's not like we're trying to depict a walk in the garden kind of relationship, you know. It's a constant, Adam and Eve's sin, I have to constantly confront my wife with her nature, constantly.
Because it's wicked, it's so deep.
She's just trying to get a word in edgewise.
To agree with him, by the way.
To agree with
him
about...
She's like, oh, honey, oh, tell the part about the other day how I did that awful thing. Tell him. Go tell him. Tell him about the wickedness. And I'm like, we don't claim you, girl. Fuck you.
One of those Candace Cameron women being like, I love my husband being the head of the household. I know.
So by 1999, Andrea has stopped taking her medication. Because remember, she was told... Do not have children. You're putting yourselves and them at risk. Like, Andrea is suffering from postpartum depression in a very major way. The term postpartum psychosis is dropped. So they put her on medication. She stops taking the medication and gets pregnant with Mary.
Yeah.
And when Rusty again calls it the fucking flu and that it's a risk worth taking, I'm like, but it's not the flu, Rusty.
No.
You've been told by doctors that it's a clinical diagnosis of postpartum depression. The flu doesn't make you hold a fucking knife to your neck. Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. I mean, I have read everything you sent me, and you are like the smartest. Oh, I'm gonna cry. You're like the smartest person I know. But
untrue,
like,
but
I just like, I think he knows now. You know what I mean?
Does he?
I don't know. How can he not? Like, his kids are dead, and I'm not letting him off the hook for all of the shit that he did at the time.
Yeah.
But like, he's gotta know now. You know, and you know, he's not like. He's not sorry enough for the things that he did to her. But, like, his five kids are dead.
But he could do so much good here, and he's not. He could
Agreed.
Do so much better here, and you be a voice here and own some shit. And because nothing, we say this a lot, right? He's not like, well, back then, that's what I thought, and I didn't know any better, and now I do. He's not saying any of that. He's kind of doing this kind of derpy, folksy, aw shucks kind of thing that is really... wildly uncalled for here when everyone else we talk to is seeing it as plain as day. David could be speaking about this in a very similar way as Rusty. Not the same because he didn't lose five children in this horrible way.
Yeah.
But David is like, I fell for it. Like, he was like, bro, I was a half a yuppie and half a religious cult. Like, what is going on here? He can recognize
it's
it.
It's true, because Rusty at no point takes accountability for, like, not insisting that they not have more kids.
And for any bit of it, not for the cult, not for, you know, like, there's nothing. There are so many times where, Rusty, the work you can do here, you can be helping men understand, partners understand, you can be raising money, you can be helping science. Like,
I
there's
just,
so
like,
much he can do.
I agree.
He got
agree.
Married within a year. Like,
but like, how do you get out of bed every day? You know what I mean?
I guess in a whole lot of denial. I don't know. In Rusty's case, you're asking? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
But it's not, and maybe I have absolutely no right to say this, but it's not enough for me.
That's okay. I mean, I don't have any issue with that. I do wonder if he's had to become a statue. You know what I mean?
I wonder.
If
I don't know.
The only way you can handle losing five kids is by becoming a statue. And I do think that, like, we see him throughout all three episodes here having to distance himself from culpability, you know? But he also doesn't blame his wife, you know?
No.
But the choices that he made and that they made, you know, led us to where we are. I just struggle with, like, he's a human being, you know?
No, I hear what you're saying. I think I'm just in a different place about it.
I agree.
You know?
Yeah. And I'm like David, because I'm half in, you know, not even half. Like, Here's all else, the last thing I'll say on this.
Yes.
Every time I look at him, I see a guy whose five children were murdered.
I totally understand
and
that.
I think I just see that before I see anything else.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
You're approaching it in a different way.
Yeah.
You know? And that's not me saying I have no...
Of course.
Like, please don't make me repeat it. Like, no. You know how I feel about this is a fucking tragedy, but I think a lot of people are culpable here.
Yes.
And it's not just... the answer isn't, well, she was crazy. That's not where we are, Rusty.
Nobody thinks that. And I think Rusty the loudest, you know?
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see him say it later, but like, I mean, Yeah.
We
can move on.
Well, I just think the editing's interesting because this might be a good time to end our first episode, but
With my nervous breakdown?
No. But like, because the editing here is interesting, like we keep getting, at first I was like, why are we interspersing? And I'm like, oh, because it's showing like how clear it was for some people and how not clear it was for Rusty because he says all of that. Yeah. And then like David the Yuppie gets a girlfriend.
About a year later, we became engaged. I slowly introduced her to by having her listen to some of the tapes. Her impression initially was that, David, this guy sounds kind of weird. I think she even used the word creepy.
Yeah, that Michael dude is super fucking weird.
And as soon as she says it, she's got
to
go.
And somewhere between this moment and David giving the cult $20,000 for a trip to Europe, he gets engaged to this woman.
Yes.
And like the cult leader tells him not to get married and David breaks up with this woman, Diane. And to this day, she's the one who got away.
Yeah. And like an important thing, and we'll get much more into this in our next episode. What Michael says to David is you're not ready because you haven't been given a divine vision from God. And this is going to set David on the course for like all the what comes next here.
Right. And like they don't know each other. This is all via the mail.
Remember, David saw him preach one time on campus. They've never met in life yet.
Right.
They've never met in it's all been through correspondence.
And also at the same time, just to wrap it up with Moses, he breaks up Moses' parents, essentially.
Yes.
He beats the father down and convinces the mother to divorce him because he's a, quote, wimp and she's the witch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, stop calling her that. She's not worthy.
I know.
Because she's part of this too, everyone. We'll get to it next week. She's a major part of this too, that Rachel.
So, fam, episode 2 is available right now and ad-free on the Patreon. If you're a subscriber, go check it out. If you want to subscribe to go get it. You're going to get over 300 full ad-free bonus episodes there as well.
And like we said, at the end of our second episode will be a lot of the things of the documentary left out and resources for you to do more like research on this case.
Yes. Join the Facebook group. Join the Discord.
Join everything.
Go in my DMs. Send me a heart emoji.
We got some shit to work out, all of us.
We'll do
it together on some way, on some platform, somehow. We'll get through it together.
All right, fam. We love you.
We love you. Stay safe, please.
Bye.